You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Maynor Roberts. This is The Frost Fair Affair, Chapter 9, Fight or Flight. "Savini," said Neem, horrified. "But he was at the opera last night. We saw him."
"Indeed," said Thornbury. He nodded to her. "Dress quickly, please. This view is charming, but we don't have a lot of time."
Neem pulled on her gown and stockings as swiftly as she could. Velvet in the daytime felt ridiculous, but at least it was warm. "Because of all the snow shovelling we have to do?"
"No," said Thornbury, looking pained. "Because there is a portal in this inn, and I just felt someone break every security measure placed upon it. Not gently."
Someone yelled downstairs, and there was the sound of shattering glass.
"The roof," Thornbury said. "Are those all your clothes?"
Despite her fingers trembling on the buttons, Neem had managed to put on several layers of petticoat, opera gown, and gloves. Her boots were drying by the fire, and she pulled those on now, lacing them quickly. It was a good thing she had learned to do without a maid, thanks to her mamma constantly monopolising the staff on their home estate. "I had a mantle," she reminded him, "and you had an overcoat, but they were stripped off us when we first came into the cider house." Hopefully, Elsie and Luce had secured the garments, somewhere they could dry off without being pinched by other customers. "I'm sorry, did you say the roof?" More crashing downstairs, and more shouting.
"Are we under attack?" Neem demanded. "Mr. Thornbury, you can't drag me onto a roof without explaining."
"If I promise to explain later, will you come without question?" he begged.
"But the roof?"
"You nearly drowned yesterday," she said plaintively.
Thornbury held his hand out to her. "No one ever drowned on a roof."
"If you give me a moment to think about it, I'm sure I can challenge your claim."
Their room was high, with a pointed gable roof overlooking the street, but not as high as it used to be. The snow had banked up overnight. Neem could see thick channels down the centre of the street where someone had powered through with a plough or intensive fireball, but the lower floors of all the buildings overlooking the river were snowed in up to their first row of windows. She could not see any way up to the roof from here and did not dare prod her magic to see if she had enough left to cushion her fall if she slipped. She would have to rely on those snowbanks being softer than they looked. There was a whistle from the roof above. Mr. Thornbury, balancing precariously on the window ledge, let out a matching whistle. A rope ladder spiralled down, falling past their ledge. Not long enough to reach the ground, but certainly a leg up in reaching the roof.
"You first," said Thornbury, holding the ladder steady. "Quick as you can. Whoever smashed through that portal just now is likely after us."
Neem climbed onto the rope ladder. This at least she could manage. She and her cousins once spent a whole summer perfecting the art of the treehouse.
"How did you manage this?" she called down to him,
once she reached the slippery, slow-laden roof tiles. There were several patches, without snow at all, as if someone had been up here recently. Someone in big boots. Thornbury untied the rope ladder at the top and made it disappear into a pocket. Clearly his own magic had not suffered from the incident in the river.
"One of my messages must have got through."
Neem wanted to know to whom he had been sending messages. That wasn't all she wanted to know. She was so full of questions she might burst. Thornbury cast some kind of charm on her boots, and Neem almost immediately felt steadier, less likely to slip and fall. "Now we run," he told her, "fast. Imagine this is a game of croquet, and someone will make you marry a gregarious baron if you lose."
"Are you trying to get us killed?"
"Not in the least. My faith in your croquet skills is exceptionally high." They ran, hand in hand, across snow-laden rooftops. This was the kind of street where
Every roof touched the nearest building, so they were able to make it quite far until a nearby chimney exploded into sparks. Thornberry grabbed Neem around her waist and pulled her down behind another chimney.
"Did someone just shoot at us? With a musket?" she demanded. "A musket?"
"I imagine so. A fireball would have done more damage. And this doesn't smell like any battle hex, I know."
Thornberry scooted down the roof to a balcony. He drew Neem with him, sliding off the snow-damp awning to crouch beneath it. "Down to ground level, I think, snow or no snow." They tumbled down a rackety set of outdoor stairs into a courtyard full of uneven snowdrifts. An archway leading to the street was only half full of snow, allowing them to crawl over and through. Now Neem's knees were wet and freezing. She had never wanted warming charms so much in her life. Also trousers.
"Why are people after us?" she asked as they clambered out into a smaller alley,
one that was part-roofed and thus had bald patches instead of solid snow all through it.
"You agreed not to question me until later," said Thornberry.
"I have been remarkably restrained."
"Fine."
Holding her hand again, he peered out to the street behind, looking both ways, and then tugged her along with him. This street had a walkway that had been cleared and salted. "I don't know why they're after us. This sort of thing tends to happen, though, when we get close."
"To each other?"
That seemed a bizarre presumption for him to make.
"When we get close to figuring out what's going on."
"And what is going on?" More to the point, though this was a question she did not dare ask, what did we mean to him if not including herself?
"I'll tell you when I figure it out."
There was a piercing whistle like the one from before. Across the street, a man in black waved at them from the driving seat of a coach and horses. He wore a hood, and his face was covered with a tired cloth, so that he looked like a bandit.
"Our pursuers have grown friendly," Neem remarked.
"That one actually is a friend," said Thornberry.
"Most days."
They dodged a couple of crowded carriages as they ran across the cleared part of the road. Neem found herself bundled into the coach on her own, much to her dismay, while Thornberry threw himself up onto the box with the coachman.
"I'll just be thinking up more questions from in here," she yelled through the window.
There was a snort of a laugh that came from both men. Their carriage ride ended at the Niobe Bridge, closed thanks to the night's heavy snowfall.
"We'll have to cross the river on foot," said Thornberry, helping Neem down again.
The man in black was ahead of them already, clearing a path through the crowd.
"You can't leave that here," yelled someone behind them, outraged at the coach being abandoned like that.
"Keep it," the man in black yelled, and kept moving.
There was something very familiar about him.
A big man, clearly used to a fight.
As he headed down the thick steps to the river below, people steered out of his path like they knew he meant business. She hadn't recognised his voice. But Neem was beginning to wonder how many details she had missed. A few steps behind their energetic protector, Neem and Thornberry looked like any other couple out for a morning's walk on the frozen river. The thought of setting foot on the ice after what had happened last night made Neem dizzy with fear. Thornberry didn't flinch. Was he made of bricks?
"Careful as you go," said Thornberry.
The charm on Neem's boots was holding fast, enabling her to stride across the ice with a semblance of confidence. It was so infuriating to be reliant on his everyday magic, having burned all of hers out in that single cry for help. Neem reached deep inside herself, testing for a spark. There was an ember or two, perhaps. What she needed was rest and time, not a hurried jaunt across the Scamander. A paper bird flew overhead. Neem might not have noticed it if she hadn't been glancing around, wondering if the glassblower's creations were still on the loose. This was a smaller and cleverer version of the birds that Neem had been taught to fold by her mama.
The first season that Neem was out, before she realised what an impediment her mother was to the process of catching decent husbands, she often returned from a ball or an assembly with dozens of notes from her mama, feathered to the hem of her dress. Sit up straighter. Don't talk to that Lady Whiting. She's no better than she should be. Have you heard about the Delvederes? Why did you have to inherit my red hair? Take that look off your face, young lady. This paper bird was thin as a ghost and fluttered through the air as if tossed by a child. The second Neem caught sight of it, the paper bird rotated in the air and stared at her. Get down, said Thornbury, and sent a fast fireball to burst the tiny paper bird into sparks and ashes. Neem fell behind him. She saw another three paper birds converging on them from various directions in between the bright huckster tents. A few curious faces turned towards them, but no one was especially fussed. I suggest we run, she said. If you want us to get anywhere in particular? That way, said Thornbury, pointing to a narrow avenue of draped stalls, selling furs, muffs, and fine embroidery. Neem darted in that direction, trusting in her charmed boots to stay steady on the ice, despite the damp weight of last night's velvet opera dress. When a ruffian grabbed her from behind, yanking on her hair, her first thought was that she would be helpless without her magic. Her second thought, owing directly to her childhood training from Mr. Zephyr, went directly to her elbow, and hence to her assailant's face. He shoved her into a stall of trinkets, bringing the owner of the stall over to complain at them both. Neem kicked out at her attacker and screamed for help, the ordinary way, without disturbing her drowsy, dormant magic. The trinket merchant started batting both Neem and her attacker away with a broom. The anti-slip charm on Neem's boots finally gave way. She slid on the ice, falling hard enough to knock the breath out of her. Please don't break, she begged the ice. Her assailant, a flat-faced and heavy-set man she had never seen before, loomed over her for only a moment before he was caught in a chokehold from behind. His eyes rolled up into his head and he fell like a heavy sack of grain onto the ice, revealing the man in black, hood, cloth mask, and all. Neem blinked. The bandit scooped her up and kept her moving onward, despite the protests from various stallholders objecting to the unconscious man, who made the place look untidy. They'll get you with a littering fine, said Neem wildly. So this was what hysteria felt like. Still, it was better than, are you the Silver Spoon Strangler, which was the thought uppermost in her head right now. Newspapers were a terrible influence. The bandit made a small noise that might have been a suppressed laugh, but said nothing more. Neem's eyes narrowed. Where's Mr. Thornbury? They hurried together around the maze of stalls and attractions. Neem turned this way and that, following his lead and wondering if the best possible option was to run in the opposite direction from where he wanted her to go. He'll meet us, said the man in black. And I'm supposed to trust you? He looked pained. As they whirled around a corner, Neem almost had it. The thing that had been bothering her about him from the start. The familiarity. Henry? He was the right size and shape to be her cousin, she supposed, though he moved so differently, even held his head in a different way. He moved like a dangerous man, like someone who knew the value of swift and silent. A man who could choke another man until he fell unconscious. Again she thought of the Silver Spoon Strangler, a famous assassin who had struck several wealthy noblemen over the last decade or so, a figure feared almost as much by the gentry as the legendary Ghost of Manticore. Was it possible that Henry was capable of something other than being an affable duke with a billiards obsession? It seemed outlandish, ridiculous. Besides, now she was closer. It didn't look like him at all. The eyebrows were wrong and the shape of his neck. His eyes were too dark. She was imagining things, clearly. It had been a very difficult couple of days. They reached a ferry post for rides all the way across the ice. Without a word, the man in black lifted her physically into the nearest wheeled boat, as if she was his to protect. No apology, no hesitation. He threw a coin to the ferryman and bundled in next to Neem as the horse took off, dragging the boat onwards. He felt safe, she realised, though clearly dangerous to others. That was why she was reminded of her cousin. No other reason. The bandit winced and shifted on the planking seat next to her. "Are you all right?" she asked. His gloved hand came away dark and wet. "Lightly stabbed. It'll be fine."
"Lightly stabbed?"
"Shh, you'll upset the driver," he whispered. "We need him to get us to the court bank."
"Upset the driver?"
"They don't like blood on the upholstery." "We're in a wooden boat," she replied, gasping a little as they judded over the ice. Clearly the wheels had been added hastily to this particular rig. "There's no upholstery." The bandit gritted his teeth. "But it's so comfortable."
"Are you hallucinating?"
"It's possible." "Port Lacrosse," called out the ferryman. Their lopsided boat listed even more to one side as he slowed, approaching the court bank of the river. "Sixpence for the return."
"No, thank you,"
called out Neem, bundling her rescuer out of the boat. He staggered slightly, and she draped one of his arms over her to support his weight.
"When did you get stabbed?"
she whispered furiously at him, heading for the nearest stone steps, leading up off the river. To anyone who looked, they might appear to be some drunken couple who'd spent all their coin on gin before lunchtime. Wonderful. "Somewhere between the roof and the river. Got a healing charm for a poor penitent?"
"Not today," she said,
though she took a moment to check in on her embers of returning magic in case they'd produced some kind of miracle. "Should we find you a hospice?" "Healers at the palace."
"We're still heading there."
"If you want to collect your man. Oh, never mind." As they came up onto Bridge Street, a covered black stagecoach clattered towards them. Thornbury, a flat cap pulled low on his face, was in the driver's seat. "Let's get going." The man in black, evidently used to doing things a certain way, lurched towards the stage as if he meant to climb up on the box with the driver. "You are an idiot," Neem told him and gave him a shove into the carriage. She meant to tell Thornbury about the man's injury, but the second she was inside, he took off at a rattling pace. She settled for producing a clean handkerchief from one of the secret pockets Juno liked to add to every garment she owned, and pressing it hard on the wound in the man in black's stomach. "Why are people trying to kill us?" she asked, on the off chance that he might be light-headed enough to give her some answers. He made an amused sort of huffing noise. Annoyed, she tugged at the black kerchief covering the lower half of his face.
"I said..."
There was a warm twang in the air as an illusion charm snapped and was released. The stranger's face shifted, his eyes bright blue for a moment, before the carriage jolted at a bump in the road and he closed his eyes in pain. It was Henry, after all. Her frivolous, cheerful, and utterly harmless dolt of a cousin, bleeding to death in her arms. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.